Good morning, happy Sabbath, if it still is morning. Good afternoon. Glad you are here. It's good to worship together and share the good news together, to lift each other up in prayer. Jesus, God knew what he was doing when he told us to do this every week. Amen? We need it. Back when I was in Laguna Niguel, I had a member who came up to me and he said, if Costco were a religion, I'd join it. And I just kind of looked at him and I was like, what is he talking about? And I just assumed that it had something to do with the policies of Costco. But later on, a few years later, I purchased a treadmill from Costco online. And I actually use the treadmill. I used it faithfully, believe it or not. And sometimes, you know, I would just like watch TV and walk on it, get my 10,000 steps in. But one day, it stopped working. I smelled something burning and the motor went out. And I thought, oh, well, it's been like, 5 years since I owned this treadmill. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, they're not going to take it back, or I can't, it's going to cost too much to fix it. And I was about to call the dumpster to pick it up, but then I thought, you know, I'm going to call Costco. I'm just going to call them. And I did. And I told them the situation. And I didn't have a box, I didn't have a receipt, but fortunately I did have the number, the purchase invoice number. I gave them that, they looked it up, they said, oh, okay, no problem, we'll come and pick it up, and we'll refund you the money. And I said, really? And sure enough, a week later, a truck came by, picked up the treadmill, and a couple days later, full refund, including tax. And I said, wow, that's amazing. I mean, there's no other company that would have done that. And so I understood that after that, what this member was saying when he said I would join it. He believed in the company. The power of personal testimony and story and experience. If someone came up to you and asked you point blank, why are you a Christian? What would your answer be? Think about it. Why are you a Christian? Maybe they don't ask like that, but I mean, what would you say? Oh, because I want to live forever. Because, you know, it's good for me, it helps me. What would your answer be? This morning, I just want to suggest to you that, based on the passage we're going to look at this morning, that the most significant answer or the thing you can do is to share your story, your personal experience as a Christian. You know, all big companies realize this. Whenever I make a purchase on Amazon, they kind of wait till you get it. And then they send you an email and they say, well, how do you like it? Right? And you give it a rating and whatnot, whether you liked it or not. And then, you know, when I sometimes stay at a hotel, afterwards I get an email. Well, how was your experience? And I tell them my experience. And when we purchase something, don't we look at the star rating? Don't we read the reviews? Because we want to hear personal testimony. And, you know, you go out to eat, you look at Yelp to see what people have to say. That's significant. We look for that. Well, it is no different with Christianity. Nothing really beats a personal testimony when it comes to sharing our faith. And Mrs. White says that we should always be ready to give a reason for our faith. So, what is my story in a nutshell? I grew up as a, and I shared parts of my story before, but this is a little different aspect. I grew up as a Christian in the Adventist home, and I was taught all the do's and don'ts of Christianity, and lots of Bible stories, and prophecy. I didn't really have a personal relationship with God. God, what to me, was more like a distant relative, like a distant uncle, a rich uncle, a really rich uncle that I really wanted to get to know, but I really didn't know how to get to know. And so as a teenager, I was full of fear about the future, especially my eternal future. And what happens if I suddenly die and I'm not ready to meet Jesus? Kind of fear. But also a significant part of this fear was due to the fact that I was a teenager growing up in the 70s. And those of you who grew up in the 70s or went through the 70s know what I'm talking about. There was just this really strong sentiment and conviction that Jesus was going to come in the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, it was just so sure because the Cold War was going on. The threat of nuclear war was very real. Vietnam was coming to a close and the hippie movement was coming to a close. But there was a lot of unrest in the country, in the world. And I remember listening to my parents talking about Jesus coming. How soon it was going to be. And I remember thinking to myself, there is no way I'm going to graduate college. Jesus is going to come before I even graduate. So, there were people around us talking about buying land in the country, moving far away, and some did. And you know what? My family did as well. My mother got caught up in this movement to move to Northern California, and she took myself and my brother, and we moved up to Napa, California, which is really not country. I mean, we moved to downtown Napa. And I later on found out what the real reason was why we moved there. It was really because my mom, her three oldest boys had moved to or gone to college to PUC, and she missed them dearly. And she wanted to really be close to them. And I didn't realize that was the real reason. But so anyway, she took us up there. And then my older brother that was right above me, he decided he wanted to go to Rio Lindo Academy. And so he went off to boarding school. And so there I was, my mom and myself in Napa, in this small little apartment next to Napa River. And it was a miserable time, lonely. I was enrolled in this public junior high school that I kid you not, was a mile away. I had to walk there and back. And the thing that remains in my mind, though, in my memory about that school, I was surprised how many kids were smoking in front of the school when I went there. And this is a junior high school. But that's just what remains in my memory. And so I was full of fear and uncertainty about the future. And all my friends were in Southern California. I was lonely. I remember, to just give you an idea of how paranoid I was about things, I remember getting a bite, I think it was a spider bite. And I had heard from somebody that there was this people were getting bit by this brown spider that if you get bit by you die in a couple of days. So I was like looking at this bite and remembering, thinking, man, am I going to die? And then I heard on the news again, it was raining really hard, and they said Napa River is going to overflow. And there we were, right next to the river, and I would like watch this river and be afraid. Fortunately, we only stayed there 2 years. And then my mother came to her right mind and brought us back down to Southern California. And then when we arrived here, we started moving around, and I went to 3 different academies in 4 years. Needless to say, I really didn't know what my future was going to be. And I kind of said this before, but when people would ask me, what are you going to become? I would say, either a pastor or a rock star, right? And, you know, when I look at myself during VBS week here, I see the humor of God, you know. I've become this rockin' pastor who's become both. Anyway, my conversion experience finally came in college. I was sitting in my bed, in my bedroom, playing my Jesus, I Love Thee on my guitar. I was really reaching out to God. And I remember about the second verse, you know, I felt this divine presence come over me. And I stopped singing. And in my mind's eye, I mean, it was like the heavens were opening. And this voice in my heart was saying, John, I love you. You know, you are mine. Very loudly and clearly. And for the record, I was not high, okay? I was high in the spirit. And the great fear that I had suddenly just disappeared. And this heavy weight that I didn't even realize was on my shoulders was lifted off. And this fog that I was living in suddenly just vanished. It dissipated. And it was like I could see for eternity. And for the first time, I felt like I was saved. I was assured of my salvation. It was just a brilliant moment. The future looked so bright. Tears of joy flowed from my eyes. And I thought to myself, here is a God, finally, that I could be excited about, I could live for, and even die for. Here's a God I could love with all my heart. So that's my story. So now I ask you, what is your story? What is your story? It could be momentary. It could have happened over a period of time. It's all unique. But there is power in your story. It doesn't have to be perfect. It could be messy. But God believes in the power of personal stories and wants us to share. We know this because the Bible is full of powerful personal stories, stories of redemption. And that's why we love the Bible and we love to hear these stories. So let's turn in our Bibles now to Mark 5, chapter 5, to our passage. And this is a wonderful story, very interesting. It starts here, they went across to the lake, to the region of the Gerasenes. Jesus goes all the way across to the other side of the lake to these Gentiles. It's amazing. And that nobody really cares about or nobody wants to get near. But more importantly, just like the Samaritan woman, he arrives at just the right time. And he comes, and it says here, when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. He had often been chained hand and foot, and he tore the chains apart and broke the irons with his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him day and night among the tombs and in the hills. He would cry out and cut himself with stones. So here Jesus meets this man, and he's got a big problem. Everybody in this region knows about this man and his problem. But here's the thing. No one knows what to do with it. You know, no one knows how to fix the problem. They try, but they are powerless against his problem. Well, here is the takeaway here. When we try to reach out to people, when we try to connect as Christians in hope of sharing the gospel, a good place to start is a place of common understanding. What do I mean by that? Most everybody in this world will agree that when they look around, there are so many big, huge problems that they don't know what to do with. There is no human remedy for all these big problems. That's a common ground. And we can start there with people. And then we can share, yes, but there is a God. There is someone who has the solution. Verse 6, when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." Have you ever met people that you've discovered that what's going on the outside of them is so very different with what's happening on the inside? A good example of this is the actor Robin Williams. He, as you know, he was a very funny man. People loved him because he was very lively, bubbly, and happy, and funny. But he died. And then people discovered that on the inside, he was struggling with depression. He was struggling with dark things on the inside. Outside, he was all bubbly. Inside, he was just struggling. When someone is acting out and rebelling, it is often a cry for help. So when Jesus looked at this man, here was this crazy, demon-possessed man, Jesus was able to see past that and see the man inside who was crying out quietly, silently, for help. That's what Jesus saw. Verse 8, for Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. Demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Well, honestly, I have no idea what to do with this part of the passage. But this much I know. And I ask you, please, do not use this passage to prove, as a proof text, that we ought not to eat pork. Okay, that's all I know, this is not a passage about that. So with that, I move on. Okay. All right, so 14, those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Isn't that an oxymoron there? Very interesting. He's sitting there dressed and in his right mind, and they're afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave the region. How could they be afraid in this situation? But here's the reality. The reality is when change comes too quickly, good or bad, in people's lives, they just simply get nervous. That's the reality. So here's a question. When it comes to Jesus, they found Jesus scary. And here's the question. Is Jesus a scary person? All right, here's another question. When Jesus was on this earth, what groups of people did not find Jesus scary? I think I heard children, right? Children. Yeah, children loved, they were not afraid of him. They came and sat on his knee and loved to be around him. What's another group of people? Sinners. Sinners. He ate with sinners. He hung out with sinners. They were not afraid of him. Okay, anybody else? The sick people. Yep, they crowded around Jesus to get close to him to be healed. They were not afraid of him. Now, who were afraid of Jesus? What groups of people were afraid of Jesus? The Pharisees, right? The Pharisees. They were afraid of him. And those who were in power. And then there was, I would dare say, sometimes the rich were afraid of Jesus because Jesus did not speak well of riches. But Jesus did, you know, use the whip in the temple to chase out the money changers and they probably found him scary. But here's the thing, here's the reality. Nobody who comes or who came to Jesus as a sinner, even the woman caught in adultery, did not find Jesus scary. In fact, Jesus was very kind and compassionate to them, and they were drawn to him. Jesus does not use fear. Verse 18. Jesus was getting into the boat. The man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him and said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. So here's the two takeaways here. Number one, we all have the unique ability to share to the people of our own kind. Jesus wants us to share to the people we hang out with on a daily basis. Yeah, once in a while we go on a mission trip. Once in a while we go to far-off places. But for the most part, it seems like Jesus is saying, minister and share with your own kind. You know, I think I told this before, but back in, there was a man in Laguna Niguel when I was there, a man who attended Saddleback Church who came to me and he said, "You know what? I've been studying and I believe that everything you Adventists teach is right. However," he said to me, "should I come, do I have to come and join the Adventist church, or can I keep attending Saddleback Church?" And I thought about that one, and finally I said, "No, you stay at Saddleback Church," because he wanted to reach out to the people at Saddleback Church with the truth. And he could do it in a way I could not. And you could not, probably. He was one of them. And so he could do it. And I think that's what Jesus is saying here. Even Jesus himself recognized at that moment, "I cannot reach these people." Can you believe that? He said, "You, demon-possessed man who was healed, you can reach them. And I want you to do it." He wants us to reach out to the people we hang out with. That's why Jesus needs all of us, each of us, to reach out to our little sphere of our world. Second takeaway, your most powerful weapon is your personal story. the healed man did not know, I don't know if he even knew who Jesus was. I think all he knew about this man, Jesus, was what the demon said about him. I think that's about it. He didn't know much. But Jesus said, go share what I've done for you, what you've experienced. That's it. Here's the point. You don't have to know a lot about the Bible. Some people say, I don't know how to give a Bible study. It's okay. You don't have to know how to give a Bible study. All you need to know, or all you need to do, is to share. That's all Jesus asks. Share your story. Share your experience with others. That's it. Let me close with a story. There's a retreat that I go to by the conference. It's called The Journey. And the leader is Paul Jensen. And he shared this story with us. He was taking his grandchildren to the soccer tournaments and whatnot. And the coach would coach, and then afterwards, you know, they would clean up. And he decided that he would stay after every tournament or practice and help the coach clean up. He kept doing this, and he and the coach started getting close. And they developed a friendship, and finally they even started to invite each other over. Well, the man, the coach, eventually came down with cancer, and he was dying. But somewhere along the line here, Paul had earned the right to share his story. And so he shared with the man about Jesus, about his experience. And before the coach died, he accepted Jesus. He accepted the faith. But before the man died, he asked Paul, will you preach, do the sermon at my funeral? And Paul said, sure, I would be honored. And then he said, Paul said to him, what would you like me to say? And so the coach told them exactly what he wanted Paul to say. And so through this experience, Paul had the opportunity. It was a packed, he said it was a packed church full of those who adored the coach, you know, and loved him. And they were all there with their children. And he had the opportunity to get up and say, you love this man, and he loved you, and this is what he wanted me to say to you. And he shared the gospel. And I have no doubt that people were moved. They were, and some of them accepted Jesus that day as their personal Savior through that experience. It's like this story. Jesus, go back and share with your people, the people you hang out with. And when they did, it says that they were amazed. They were amazed. And when we share our story of how Jesus touched our lives, how Jesus changed our lives, how he saved us,